LinkedIn News.
Job searching is tough. We all know it, but few of us take the steps to protect our mental health from the challenges inherent in the process. Well, we're talking all about how to do just that on today's episode of Get Hired, right after this break.
The LinkedIn Podcast Network is sponsored by HubSpot. Imagine growing a business with high-quality leads, fast-closing deals, and wildly happy customers. It's not a miracle. It's HubSpot. Visit HubSpot.com to get started today.
From LinkedIn News, this is Get Hired, a podcast for the ups and downs and the ever-changing landscape of our professional lives. I'm Andrew Seaman, LinkedIn Senior Managing Editor for Jobs and Career Development, bringing you conversations with experts who, like me, want to see you succeed at work, at home, and everywhere in between. I've met very few people who genuinely enjoy the job search process. Even if we've been through the process several times, the joy of landing a role can often wipe our memories of the challenges we face during the process. If you're in the middle of a job search or preparing for one, we're talking all about steps you can take to guard your mental health during the process, including negotiations, rejections, and more. We're talking with Linda Lee, who is a recruiter, mental health advocate, and founder of Creatively Quiet. She uses what she's learned, her past challenges, and her experiences to educate others about the importance of putting themselves first. To get things started, let's hear how Linda would approach a job search today.
If I were going back into the job search, I would take time for me first, because a job is always going to be there. But I always like to think, who am I outside of work? Because a job search is like a full-time job as well, 40 hours, however you want to call it. I always like to prioritize me, like, who is Linda outside of work? Who is Linda outside of a title? Who is Linda outside of a job search? And if I'm able to find things that I love that spark joy within me after my 9-to-5, before my 9-to-5, it creates this foundation that I'm going to be okay no matter what happens externally. Because if I'm okay internally, externally, no matter like the rejections, the burnout, whatever people throw at me, it's not going to affect me because I'm swimming on the inside. So if the shores are rough on the outside, I know I can survive it.
Yeah, I think that's a really beautiful way to put it, too, because I think people, they don't realize how important it is to know who you are outside of work or outside of your profession. And I think that goes for anyone who's making a career move. And I've told this story before. When I came to LinkedIn, I came from a full-time job. And LinkedIn, it's an amazing place to work. And when I got here, I was so excited. The people were wonderful. But I was also weirdly depressed. And I was on the bus one day coming to work, and I was just like, why do I feel this way? And I opened up the New York Times, and there was a op-ed in there, and it talked about loss when it comes to a job. And the whole point was, if your identity is too wrapped up in what you do, whenever you leave that job, whether it's because you're going to a better opportunity or something, you're still going to feel like you're lost or that you've lost something. And that was a wake-up call for me to say, okay, I need to know who I am without my job.
Yes, most definitely. My last job, that was who I was. When someone asked me who I was, it was just my job. I would work nights and mornings, first one in, last one out. I would turn away friends. I was like, no, I have to meet my sales goal. It's like 9 o'clock at night. And I got this adrenaline rush. And then the burnout set in, waking up with panic attacks, crying myself to sleep, scared to check emails. And it got to a point where it's just my relationships are failing. Like, who was I outside of work? And it got to a point where it's like, why do I have to go to the doctor and ask for like a anxiety prescription because I can't function at work? And I'll never forget my therapist and my doctor. They were just like, I can give you all the pills you want. You can come to these sessions every single week, but until you treat the disease, the symptoms will not go away. And when I left that job, I promised myself I will never allow a job to define me. I log out at 5 o'clock. I don't check my emails in the morning. I have a life outside of work. I don't answer calls. I'm on do not disturb. My work is just a job at the end of the day. Linda is full time.
Yeah, that's really important. And I always tell people that they get to dictate their relationship with work. I think when you start having that is your most important thing, or like that's what you're obsessed with, you do have to step back and say, is that a good thing? And with the job search, too, like once you say, OK, I know who I am outside of the 9 to 5 and I do need to start putting myself out there. What is your advice for doing that? Because for a lot of people, it means putting themselves out there in terms of being vulnerable, maybe doing informational interviews. And frankly, it's just a lot of rejection.
Most definitely. I'll never forget my 100th rejection. How I overcame that was I allowed myself to accept me first. Like, I'm my first acceptance letter, if that makes sense. And at first, it's like dating, you know, you keep dating. It's just like, why doesn't this guy meet this or this? Why won't he open the door? And then you think, oh, there's never going to be someone out there for you. And then you meet that one person who checks all the boxes, who accepts you, who doesn't reject you. And that's exactly like the job search. People don't understand that you have to get the 100th rejection before you can get that one yes. And I live by the compound effect. You're never going to get that one yes without like 1,000 no's. I know when I was networking and sending out in-mails and outbounds and cold calls, I would get people ghost me or they say they're not interested. And it got to a point where I'm like, I'm not going to take this personally because that's not meant for me. And I always see rejection as guidance rather than a loss. And it's always a redirection. And I'm so thankful for the times where, hey, that opportunity didn't work out. Hey, that person didn't get back to me because it led to this person and that yes and this company. And I always believe that there's timing. And I know not a lot of people can see that. When you're in the midst of it, it's really hard to see the other side of it. But there's always something waiting for you. And I always believe like that mindset of, hey, the best is yet to come. It's almost there. But consistency is the foundation and it's the recipe for success. Because you can't just stop and then expect the door is going to open. You have to keep knocking on every single door until you find one that's going to open.
Totally. When you're in that moment and you get that rejection, it's tough, but there's a tomorrow and there's another day after that. And eventually you look back and you're like, okay, that put me on the path that got me to where I am.
Most definitely. The company that I'm at, I actually got rejected the first time, but then I started networking because it ain't over till it's over, you know? And people think that one rejection is going to define you or it should stop you, but you define that rejection. You define where you're going to go next.
Yeah. And also, you touched on this earlier, the idea that it's not personal. And I know this is going to sound so harsh, but it's not. For a recruiter or a hiring manager, they don't deal with you long enough if you're going to get a rejection for it to be a personal issue. For them, it's just, I don't think this person's right for this role. And they move on. It's like a double-edged sword because you're like, it isn't personal. But then at the same time, you're like, oh, that didn't really matter to them. It's just that I wasn't a good fit, right?
Yeah. At the end of the day, it's not personal because it's a job. Don't put all your eggs in one basket. And then it's just like, oh my gosh, I'm worthless because this one thing didn't work out.
Yeah.
You're worth so much outside of that.
And obviously, once you put yourself out there, the thing that was always hardest for me was the waiting. So I have OCD. There are different types of OCD, but the common theme is incredible anxiety. And the waiting was always what drove me crazy. And what I would do a lot of times is I think I would follow up too much because I was so worried. Do you have any suggestions for people who find themselves maybe in that situation?
I actually was in that position recently when I was interviewing for jobs. I'll never forget a company. They chased me at first. And then when they got me through like an 8-week interview process, they would ghost me for a week. And then they reach out and they're like, hey, do you still want it? Why aren't you following up? And I remember I told the hiring manager, I was very blunt because I had 3 other interviews, so I wasn't too scared. But I was like, I'm not chasing someone that doesn't want me. And then they got really scared. Then they like put an interview on my calendar the next day. So then I remember the lesson. I'm like, never want someone if they don't want you back either.
Yeah, I think that's really good advice. And another trap, it's the idea of sort of falling in love with a job before you have it, because it's almost like setting you up for a huge blow. For as difficult as it is, if you walk out of an interview and you think it's just the most amazing slam dunk that they couldn't possibly go with anyone other than you, like think of another person who's just slightly better or has a little bit more experience. And maybe they didn't have as good of a time with that person, but they saw something on their resume that they really liked. What's your advice for people who feel like everything has aligned? That could really also set back their job search because they stop looking for other jobs because they think this one's in the bag.
As a recruiter and as a candidate as well, don't ever stop interviewing. Even if you get the offer, until it's signed and you start, don't ever stop looking. When I was interviewing at 4 different companies, that one company that I was in like the final stages for, and I put that in quotes because it was taking forever, the hiring manager is like, "We really want you," but I was still interviewing on the side. And then when I got an offer on the side while I was still in that process, I called them and like, "Hey, I found something else. It aligned with me." And they tried to talk me out of it. They're like, "No, keep going through the process with us." And that lesson taught me, just because you're in this process and everything is going well, there's so many factors. Like, it couldn't work out. Someone might not like you. There might be another candidate who is just aligned as you. Maybe they're better. Maybe they're not. Maybe they flipped a coin. But don't ever stop interviewing or stop looking somewhere else, because at the end of the day, companies prioritize what they need. They don't prioritize you. They're going to do what's best for them. You need to do what's best for you.
We'll be right back with Linda Lee.
The LinkedIn Podcast Network is sponsored by TIAA. In the last 100 years, we've seen financial markets swing, new currencies come and go, decades of savings lost in days, all showing that a retirement plan without a guarantee, quite simply, isn't enough. So more than a retirement plan, TIAA makes you a retirement promise, a promise of a guaranteed retirement paycheck for life, a promise that pays off. Learn more at TIAA.org/promisespayoff. The LinkedIn Podcast Network is sponsored by HubSpot. More to-dos, less time, and so many tools to keep track of. Doing business can be hard, but you don't need a miracle to hit your goals. You just need HubSpot. Their all-in-one customer platform can make growing your business infinitely easier. Imagine this: higher quality leads, fast closing deals, wildly happy customers, and more benchmark-breaking quarters. It's not a miracle, it's HubSpot. Visit HubSpot.com to get started today.
And we're back with Linda Lee, who's a mental health advocate, recruiter, and founder of Creatively Quiet. As you're job searching, what do you think people can do, just like in terms of practices, to make sure that they're checking in with their mental health? Because it's like any other part of your health. Like for me, I journal. So every day I write 3 or 4 pages in a journal. And for me, that's my therapy. What do you suggest people do?
I think the biggest lesson for me is you don't have to wait to go to therapy when you're like broken or hurting or burnt out to go to therapy. I really recommend that people go to therapy or do therapeutic things when life is really good. Because what I've learned is I wait till life is really bad and then I go, and then they can't pull me out of that rabbit hole because they're like, "Hey, you're spiraling. You can't even think straight for us to help you." But when I go to therapy when life is really good, I'm able to get the tools that I need to help me when life is falling down. And I learn to exercise or do arts and crafts or go out with friends, go on a trip, even just sitting and watching TV. That's therapeutic too. People should do the things that make them happiest. Check in with themselves like, "Hey, what's going on here?" Be vocal. Don't be the kind of person that's like, "This problem occurs, I'm going to push it to the side." But that problem will get louder and louder, because problems don't go away until you sit down and address it. It's always going to be there. It's going to hide in different corners until you decide to go and look for it.
Yeah. And also when it comes to negotiations, and I know you probably go through this a lot with people, I think that is a very stressful time for people, and they don't know that they can negotiate, or they don't know how to, and they feel like they're the weak person in that relationship because they have, you know, a company with a lot of money saying, "Hey, we'll give you this much, but, you know, you're afraid if you ask for too much, you'll get declined." What's your advice for navigating that? Because there's a lot of emotions tied into that.
Most definitely. So every candidate that I have given an offer to, they've always negotiated. And I'm so happy for them as a person. But as a recruiter, I'm like, "Man, I have extra paperwork." But what I've learned is that closed mouths don't get fed. If you settle, that's what you're going to get. No one is coming to save you. No one is going to help you. No one is going to give you what you want unless you're willing to stand up, be your biggest advocate, and help yourself. And if I can tell any candidate anything, is that that hiring manager gave you an offer for a reason. So they really want you as well. And most of the time, unless like their budget is like fixed, unless HR says no, they'll be able to work with you to find either a compromise. And it doesn't even have to be salary. Sometimes it could be relocation. It could be an extra signing bonus. It could be benefits. I've seen candidates negotiate all sorts of things. And it's just, don't just think I'm pigeonholed in my compensation. There's so much things that a company is willing to give you and provide. You have to be willing to ask for it. And I know it's so scary to think, oh, they're going to take the offer back if I ask for more. The worst thing that's going to happen is they're going to say no.
Yeah. And there's also things that if you know that that is what guards your mental health or that's important to you, that could be part of the negotiation, right?
Most definitely. I worked at a company who did not want me to succeed outside of work in the sense where it's like, hey, I can't do things that I love. I love content creation. And my current company, what was a very strong boundary for me was the flexible work culture, remote work, and being able to work on my side hustles. And that was like a non-negotiable for me when I started, because I was specifically looking for a company that offered flexible work where I can work my hours, get things done. But hey, you're not going to micromanage me in the sense where it's you can't do things that you love outside of work, even though it's not during work. And that was more important to me than a salary. Obviously, salary is important to pay our bills and financials and everything, but those were my non-negotiables there.
You bring up a really good point about the non-negotiables. You really do need to sit down and craft that. And I think a lot of people, when they hear non-negotiables or needs and wants, they think mostly benefits in terms of health insurance and then salary, which are important. But you could also say, listen, I do need flexible work or at least certain number of days at home. Like, you can bring those into that conversation, right?
You definitely can and you should, because it's so important, because an employer is not going to know your non-negotiables if you don't know your non-negotiables. So that's why it's so important to set your why and your foundation before you start interviewing, because what I've seen is people take advantage. If they know they can walk all over you, they're going to walk all over you. If you set boundaries, this is what I tolerate, this is what I accept, this is my no, that's how they know I can't walk over this person. I can't make this employee stay after hours because their family is more important than this job. So if an employer knows that, they can meet you halfway and respect you, that's how you win.
And then something also I wanted to ask you is there are a lot of people, obviously, who are in really tough positions sometimes, like when they reach a breaking point with their job. And what I always tell people is I don't think people should have to love their job, but it shouldn't make them miserable. You're going to have off days, but if things start to shift toward every day as one of those days, then that's probably a sign something has to change. How do you navigate trying to address that internally versus looking externally for a jump?
I can compare, because my last job was very toxic. At first, it was okay. And then I started feeling this pit in my stomach and I started avoiding it. Then I would go to therapy and they're just like, what's wrong? But then I was scared to say anything, because that's how you know, because like my culture would be like, you're not allowed to say all these things. And there was this gaslighting and you can't leave because you're weak and all of these things. So it was like this manipulation. When I go to therapy, it's just like, maybe it's just me. Like, maybe I'm the problem. But then I realized I am not the problem, because I shouldn't be feeling this way on a Friday and on a Sunday. I shouldn't wake up scared to go to work. I shouldn't be taking paid time off and then having an employer text me while I'm on vacations like, hey, you need to log in. Those were things that I started noticing. And I actually left my job, but without anything lined up. And I got really lucky to find a new one. People were like, you shouldn't leave. But I was like, it's killing my mental health. It's taking more away than it's giving me. So that's how I knew when to leave. And with my current job, don't get me wrong, like there are days where it's just like nothing's perfect or something just falls through the cracks. And how I combat that is by having a life outside of work. When 5 o'clock hits, my time's up. And then I have things to look forward to, like friends or family or something that I love, an event, watching Netflix or shows. I set a boundary. I do not check my work emails when I wake up. Anything that doesn't have to do with work, with me time. So that's how I combat the internally and the externally. And I also learned the happy medium is when something is really going wrong, I realize I really tie myself to my job. Yeah. And that's my problem. I had someone tell me, it's just like, why are you so upset over your job in the past? And then I realized they were right. Why am I upset over a job? It's just a job. It's just something I do 9 to 5. Why do I take it home with me? So Don't let your identity become your job.
I think that's really good advice. And is there anything else that you think is important for people to know or anything that you would really recommend to people who are navigating a job search?
Just know that it doesn't define you. You're not worthless if you get like 1,000 rejections, because at the moment, the market is very tough. There's nothing wrong with you. Like, it's not your qualifications. Just look at it as the market is tough and there are thousands of candidates that you're competing with. And I think like being realistic and looking at all the outside factors is really going to help you with that mindset shift. So instead of blaming yourself internally, try to look at factors externally first.
Well, thank you so much, Linda.
Thank you.
That was Linda Lee, who is a mental health advocate, recruiter, and founder of Creatively Quiet. Remember, it's up to you to put our advice into practice. Still, you always have a community backing you up and cheering you on. Connect with me and the Get Hired community on LinkedIn to continue the conversation. And make sure to subscribe to my weekly Get Hired newsletter. More than 1 million people already have. Also, if you like this episode, take a moment to leave us a rating on Apple Podcasts. It helps people like you find the show. And don't forget to click that follow, subscribe, or whatever other button you find to get our podcast delivered to you every Wednesday. Because we'll be continuing these conversations on the next episode, right here wherever you like to listen. Get Hired is a production of LinkedIn News. This episode was produced by Alexis Ramdow, Asaf Gidron engineered our show, Joe DeGiorgi mixed our show, Dave Pond is head of news production. Enrique Montalvo is our executive producer. Courtney Koop is the head of original programming for LinkedIn. Dan Roth is the editor-in-chief of LinkedIn. And I'm Andrew Seaman. Until next time, stay well and best of luck.